Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. I'm so grateful you're spending part of your day with us today. Dave Grohl wasn't always, as he puts it, that guy from Nirvana or the frontman for the superstar rock band Foo Fighters. Grohl was a nerd, a punk, a romantic, a dreamer, Virginia's kid. The suburbs where he grew up weren't exactly a breeding ground for artists looking to change the culture. So after receiving his mother's blessing, Dave dropped out of high school, lied about his age, and went on his first professional tour as a drummer. And thus began a storied career. And Dave Grohl has stories. For days, riots at punk shows, sleeping on Kurt Cobain's couch, to the scariest gig of his career, which he said was playing with his daughter at her school. Reflections on these moments are now compiled in Dave Grohl's new memoir, the book called The Storyteller, Tales of Life and Music. Let's listen to a clip of Dave reading a bit from the audiobook. It's the moment when he decides to join the DC punk band Scream and drop out of high school. But first, he had to tell his mother.
My biggest concern was my mother, of course. The woman who had sacrificed so much for me, devoted every second of her life to my personal well-being, and shown me nothing but love from the day I was born. I never wanted to disappoint her because aside from being my mother, she was my best friend. I couldn't let her down. I like to say now that she disciplined me with freedom by allowing me to wander, to find my path, and ultimately find myself. I never wanted to sacrifice her trust, so I respected her and always kept it cool. I knew that my leaving school at such a young age would break her heart. But I also knew that staying would break mine. We sat at her desk, and with my head hung in shame, I explained that I wanted to drop out of high school and tour the world. Her response? You'd better be good.
Dave's mother's an important figure in his life, so much so that he even directed a streaming series this year based on a book she wrote called From Cradle to Stage, full of stories of mothers who raised rock stars. I Zoomed with Dave Grohl last week to talk about his new memoir, and I began by asking him about a story in the book about how and why his mom took him to jazz clubs when he was a kid.
Well, first of all, both of my parents were musicians. My mom, she sang in an a cappella group in the 50s with her friends. My dad was a classically trained flautist. And there was always music in the house. There was a like great appreciation of music, no matter what kind. And my mom and I would drive around and sing together, listen to 70s AM radio. But my mom got really into going to this jazz club in DC called One Step Down. And they had this thing on Sundays. It was a jazz workshop, and there was a house band, this piano player named Lawrence Wheatley, and this great band. And these were like real, like old school DC jazz guys. And you would sit and watch the house band do like a set, but there was a sign up sheet that they would invite other musicians to play. And so on my mother's birthday one year, I think I was like 15 years old, and I was like a punk rock kid. She goes, you know what I want for my birthday? I want you to go play with the band. Go to the sign-up sheet and put your name. I was like, Mom, this is jazz. Like, I'd been playing drums on pillows, listening to like punk rock records. I'm like, Mom, this is not normal drumming. This is crazy drumming. Like, I can't. And she's like, please. So I signed my name and they called me up and I went up there and, you know, just kept time. It's not like I was gonna do anything fun, like fancy. And it was in that moment that I realized, like, okay, if I want to be a drummer, I need to figure this out. Like, no more just sitting on the pillows. No more just listening to punk rock records. I got to figure it out. And I asked the house band drummer, Lenny Robinson, to give me a lesson. And he did. It was $30 an hour. And my mom was a public school teacher. Like, we didn't have drum lesson money. You know, like, for me to take one drum lesson would have been like mowing six lawns in the neighborhood. And I took that one lesson, and it was me on a practice pad just going right, left, right, right, left, right, left, left. And I thought, oh my God, it's going to take $1 million for me to learn how to play like Lenny Robinson. So I just went back to the pillows and the punk rock records. But it was, you know, it was a big experience because I thought, all right, man, like it was a challenge to me. And I thought, okay, I'm going to figure it out.
When did you go from liking playing drums to loving it to being really obsessed with it?
Well, you know, my first instrument was guitar, and I played guitar in my neighborhood bands, but I'd always wait for the drummer to go home. And then I'd sit down at the set and I'd start to kind of like try to figure stuff out. And then it finally came to one band where I looked at the drummer. I said, you know what? I can do this. Why don't you play guitar? I'll play drums. And once I was let loose in that way, I really fell in love with it. And I was learning things so quickly by listening to records, just kind of like taking tricks from all my favorite drummers and putting that into what I was doing. And I mean, I still love it. The cool thing with me, I don't really have to think about playing the drums. And obviously I'm not the greatest drummer in the world, but I don't think about it. It just, there's like a disconnect between my head and my hands. Like it just, it's almost like dancing. Like you're not mm-hmm. thinking about what you're doing when you're dancing, you know, you're just kind of dancing. It's the same way with drumming for me. So it's very free. Like it feels really good to do it. And I love it now more than I ever have. Even though I'm not in a band playing the drums, I have a greater appreciation of it now than I did then. And I still come up with new ideas. I love it.
My guest, Dave Grohl, we're talking about his new book, The Storyteller. So there's this great description of your cool cousin, Tracy.
Yeah.
Cool cousin Tracy. I'm going to read it. With shiny Doc Martens, black bondage pants, an antipasti t-shirt, and a shaved head, she was a terrifyingly yet glorious vision of rebellion. Long gone were the tennis shorts and sneakers from last summer. Tracy had transformed into something I'd seen only on primetime TV shows like Chips or Quincy. But this was no cartoonish, spiky-haired villain terrorizing a silly sitcom with reckless anarchy and a clamorous soundtrack in the background. No, this was the real effing deal. I stood in awe as if I were face to face with an alien sent from another civilization, examining every spike, every safety pin, every leather strap with joyous bewilderment. But my shock and surprise were calmed by the instant she greeted us with her usual sunny smile. It was still Tracy, just turned up to like 11 in a post-apocalyptic superhero. To say that I was excited would be one of my life's greatest understatements. I was beside myself. Something had been awakened in me. I just wasn't yet sure what that was.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so Tracy is my cousin. Though technically not blood relative cousin, her mother was in that a cappella singing group with my mom in the 50s. So our family were always very close. So we would go up. I'm from Virginia, just outside mm-hmm. of D.C. We would always make this summer trek to Chicago to spend a few weeks with them. They lived in Evanston, right near the lake. It was great. I mean, to us, that was like a resort, you know, from Springfield, Virginia. So we go up to Chicago, and there's like a lake and beaches. And I was used to this Tracy that I had known my whole life, who was very, like, it was tomboy, all-American girl, really fun, full of life, full of energy. And we show up this one year, and she's a punk rocker. And the thing was, like, where I grew up, it was very, like, white picket fence suburbia. But I felt different than other people. And I don't know why. I don't know what it was. I first recognized that feeling when I saw the B-52s on Saturday Night Live when they played Rock Lobster in like 1979, whatever it was. It was so weird and eccentric and quirky and bizarre. It was like their freak flag. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like them. Mm-hmm. And so I never had a way to express it. And when I met Tracy, I was like, oh my God, I'm one of them, man. Like I'm one of them. And she took me to go see a band that night. I'd never seen a band play live before. I'd never seen a concert. I think I was 13. And I had these posters on my walls of like Zeppelin and Kiss and explosions and lasers and dragons and stuff. And I went to this punk rock show and there was like two amps on the stage, four dudes that knew like four chords. And they clicked into a song and the place exploded and it was so loud. And there's people stage diving and my chest is up against the thing and the guy's sweating all over me. And I was like, oh my God, this is rock and roll. Like, forget those lasers and dragons, mm-hmm. man. This is intense. This is a really, really visceral, crazy, amazing feeling. It was like a baptism for me. I was just like, oh my God, this is the first day of the rest of my life. But the thing that I loved about it the most was that it seemed accessible. I was like, man, I know those chords.
Yeah.
Like I could scream into a microphone. I'm going to do that. And then I went back home to Virginia. I was like, hey, everybody, look at this cool new thing. And they're like, Dave, are you out of your mind? You know, but that was a huge moment for me.
Except Virginia. I mean, you said you kind of didn't know why you were like that. She gave you the space to be like that, it sounds like.
You know, I think It was because she was a public school teacher for 35 years. And so as a public school teacher, she understood not only are no two kids alike, but no two kids learn in the same way. And I think that she saw in me this drive or determination or passion that I didn't have in school. Oh my God, I was the worst student in the world. Like, I mean, my grades were terrible. Even though my mother was like the greatest teacher in our high school, everyone loved her. She was the cool teacher. But I think she saw in me, she's like, okay, you're not designed to just sit under those fluorescent lights for 6 hours a day. Like, there's a whole other world out there that I think you need to see. And when I decided to leave school to start playing music, she was like, okay, well, you better be good. So go. And she let me go.
You write about that in the book, and it's actually in the audio book as well. What was it like to read your life?
Really weird. I mean, you know, it's one thing when you type these things out on a keyboard and then just like hit send. It's another when you hear yourself saying these things. It's weird. It reminds me of when I was young, maybe 12 or 13 years old, I had this cassette player that I would put next on the little windowsill next to my bed. And I would play cassettes as I went to sleep every night. But then I started putting blank cassettes in there and I would hit record and I would talk about my problems. I would talk about like the trouble I had in school or like the girl I had a crush on or the dude that wanted to kick my ass, whatever it was. And then I would hit rewind and hit play and I would fall asleep listening to myself talk about my problems. And it's so weird. I forgot that I did that for decades. And then I'm like, oh my God, I made these cassettes. Like, I hope I destroyed those things. Oh, that's totally weird. But writing the book and reading the book was very much the same. Because it's one thing to set your eyes on a bunch of words on a screen. It's another thing when they're realized in sound, in your own voice. And a lot of it was really emotional, man. Like, it's one thing for me to kind of like open up and reveal these things, but then to have to say them to everyone, it got heavy. And plus, I mean, it was right in the middle of this time where we were doing all these shows and my voice was just thrashed. And I'd start talking and I'd look at the engineer like, are you sure this sounds good? Sounds great.
I really like my mom. She's the best.
And then I join Nirvana.
My guest is Dave Grohl. The name of his book is The Storyteller, Tales of Life and Music. You know, so you're early on in your career. You've joined a band called Scream. And then there's an opportunity to try out for a band called Nirvana. What were you weighing? What were the pros and cons of trying out for Nirvana when you were approached?
I mean, to be honest, at that time, our band Scream, you know, we did what most hardcore punk rock bands did. And we toured in a van and we slept on people's floors and we were in sleeping bags and stuff like that. And there was never any real money. I think we had $7 a day per diem if we even had that. And we wound up all the way out in California and our bass player decided to go home without telling anybody. So we were kind of stranded. We had no way to get back. And a few weeks went by and I thought, oh my God, really? I'm going to live like in a house full of mud wrestlers in Laurel Canyon for the rest of my life? Like, that's not how I imagined this thing playing out. And I called a mutual friend and I said, hey, we're stuck down here. If your band is coming down, let me know. And he said, what happened? I told him. And then he said, have you ever heard of Nirvana? And I said, yeah, of course. Their first record, Bleach. Mm-hmm. Everybody loved that record. He said, they're looking for a drummer. And they actually saw you a couple weeks ago playing in like Olympia, Washington. And they liked the way you play the drums. And so he gave me their phone number and I called them up. At first they said, well, we already have a drummer. We picked this one other guy. And I was like, okay, yeah, cool, whatever. And then they called back that night and said, you know what? Maybe you should come up here. If you can get up to Seattle, let's jam. But then I was kind of at this crossroads where I'm like, all right, you know, music is what like keeps me alive. Music is the thing that's helped me survive my whole life. And even in like the lowest, darkest moments where there is nothing to eat or there is nowhere to sleep, or it's the music that keeps you there. When the music's taken away, that's when it gets really difficult. And at the time there was no music. So I really just followed the music. You know, I was like, they need a drummer. I'm going to go up there because I have to play music and there's none here right now. So I made the trip up there, and you know the rest of the story.
I know it well. I know it well. What, you know, when you think about it, and this is one of those super cheesy questions, I acknowledge that in the front of it. If that Dave Grohl met this Dave Grohl at a bar and said, dude, I got this chance to be with this band, and I'm really not sure what to do. I'm sort of concerned about the future. What advice would you have given him?
Well, like you said, the pros and cons. The most difficult part about making that decision was my friends who were in my band that I was going to leave, you know, like when you're stuck in a van with your buddies for years and years, like fighting your way through every day and every show, every situation, you become really close. That was the most difficult part, mm-hmm. was making the decision to leave. And I called my mother. And I said, Mom, I'm not sure what to do. Like, I have this opportunity. What do I do? And my mom said, you know, sometimes you have to do what's best for yourself, which kind of blew my mind because she was the most altruistic, giving, generous, loving person I've ever met, still to this day in my life. Most public school teachers are. Mm-hmm. And so I took her advice because my whole life, she's the wise one. You know, if I were ever in question of anything, I'd ask her opinion. And I understood what she meant, because in a way, when I was young and my parents divorced, that was my real first lesson in survival. And I think at that time, my mom thought, well, I have to do this because this is what's best mm-hmm. for me. And so then I was at this crossroads, and she was right, you know.
That was part one of my conversation with Dave Grohl of Foo Fighters and Nirvana about his new book, The Storyteller, Tales of Life and Music. You can hear the second part of our conversation at this same time tomorrow, and we'll hear Dave talk about his early memories of touring with Nirvana, about his relationship with Kurt Cobain, and how, unlike many of his peers, he's made it to a glorious middle age. This is all of it.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.